Welcome to Punk Frockers, a community sewing podcast brought to you by Jenny Hassler and Beverly Baptiste.
Good morning, Beverly. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Jenny. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. Are you you feeling warmed up now?
Oh my gosh. So as we're recording this, yesterday, Jim and I went to the final Ravens regular season game of the year, and it was just warm enough to not be snowing, but it was still raining. And just so it was about 36 degrees, which for our friends is about 1 or 2, I think, Celsius, because it's just over freezing in the pouring rain. So yes, it took us very long time to warm up, but we did warm up. How are you doing?
I'm so fortunate that I have not been nearly that cold. I've been celebrating my older granddaughter's birthday out of town this weekend, so I'm in a hotel today. But it's been delightful. What have you been up to sewing wise?
Well, I have been using my blocks from my from the Brooks and Camber pants class.
Yeah.
And this time I think the last episode we talked about, I had started a process of making these using a semi-fit block to make a pair of chinos.
Right.
And I've now made 2 pairs of chinos. One is with this olive Oxford. I'm going to recommend, if folks are looking for chino style pants and they want like the fabric, this is like the closest I've found to that kind of fabric and very, really nice quality from Style Maker Fabrics. I will warn you though, it's Japanese and it's very narrow. So for a pair of pants for me, I would generally need 2 yards and I needed 3 yards.
Okay.
So just, you know, keep that in mind. But I got this Oxford, and it's a bottom weight Oxford fabric, really nice olive color, and then this taupe twill from them. And both of them feel like exactly what I was looking for like chino style pants. And then I also finished, do you remember when I took that hand quilted class?
Hand
quilted vest class? Well, I had, as soon as the class was over, it didn't get finished in the class, so it immediately went into a bin to never be finished again.
Of course.
But I finished it. All that needed to be finished was like hand stitching the binding around. So I finished it and I gave it to my mom for Christmas because I don't know, I thought it looked kind of weird on me. And my mom likes that kind of thing. So she was really happy with it. So that's what I've done. What have you been doing?
That feels like a win-win for the vest, though. You got the chance to take the class, learn the skills, do what you wanted to do, and then you were not forced to wear the garment. So that's perfect. I love it. I am in a slump. I am in a sewing slump. I have been, I know, extraordinarily busy at work, and my boss, the CFO, basically let me know about 6 months ago that he was leaving, and his last day was actually Friday before today as we're recording.
Oh my
God. So I've spent a lot of the last 5 or 6 months really trying to get prepped for the part that I was going to be losing. I think my favorite of the bosses I've ever had, but that also we're not replacing him. So I'm taking on some additional responsibilities, which is always a super, stressful, but amazing, because I tend to be that kind of person time. So it's been, I've been, I think, really, really busy. And so when I get home from work, instead of sewing, and before work, before I go, instead of sewing, I've been playing video games. So I haven't made very much. The big thing that I've made since we last spoke, I think, is my Mrs. Claus costume, since I play Mrs. Claus for about 7 shows in December.
Well, that's also what you've been doing with your time, by the way.
Yes, that's true. I have been doing that. And I made that out of a honeyborn dress by Cashmerette from the first book that Jenny Rushmore published, and I added fur around it, and I made it. Okay, so this is where I got dumb, and I don't understand what I did wrong, but I kind of know because it's a given, but I bought a polyester satin to make the body of my dress out of, because last year I made my dress out of linen and I pre-washed it several times. And even so, it still bled red onto the white trim. Mm. And so this year I did two things. I basted the trim on and I bought a polyester satin to make the dress out of. And I get this text from my husband a few days after the show ends saying, "I'm so sorry, Mrs. Claus's trim is pink again." And I'm confused because I thought in my brain, well, poly satin doesn't bleed. Like I pre-washed it. I did pre-wash it, but it's polyester. Isn't it like melted into the plastic or something? Like, I don't know how that works. Well, first of all,
wasn't the point of basting it in so you would remove it before you washed it?
Well, no, it was so I could remove it if it was ruined.
Oh, okay.
So
also, do you guys use
color catchers?
Color catchers?
We do. Oh. Yeah. We use them pretty much in every wash because things turn colors otherwise, because I dye a lot of stuff, right? So I'm very confused by this one. And it turned like a lovely pink, but it was in with our bathroom rug, which is white, and with our other bathroom rug, which is a white background and had a flamingo on it. But the flamingo was always a little weird. It was kind of like a peachy orange flamingo. Both rugs look perfectly evenly dyed this light pink color. And on the flamingo, even with the color catcher in there. And on the flamingo now looks the right color of kind of peachy pink. So it actually improved the rugs.
Okay. Oh my God.
And I was able to just snip it and tear off the fur because, you know, it was.
The weird thing too is like generally, I guess synthetic dyes will dye, the dyes that will dye synthetic stuff will also dye cotton. It's the ones that are specific for cotton that won't dye synthetic.
Right. Because the rugs were both cotton or mostly cotton, but the fur trim obviously was synthetic. It just, in my head, synthetics don't bleed.
That's true. I would believe that too.
And since I don't use synthetics very often, I don't think I've ever gotten to experience that. And I certainly don't use richly hued, like a red synthetic ever. Like, I'm not sure I've literally ever done that before with a red, right? So that was just, it was surprising to me.
Well, I guess and you just replace the trim for next year.
That's exactly it. And with that fur, oh my God, that fur was so terrible to cut. Like, I think there's still fur in the house from when I cut it up, you know, to trim it.
Maybe
to make
Velcro
the,
next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, it was so bad. So I also think next year I'm going to try a different fur again. Like, this is the second type of fur I've tried. And I was hopeful it would be better, but it was so bad. It was like a tiny little puffball exploded all over the house. So bad. So, lessons.
Wow. Well, it was a beautiful dress, though. I mean, I think that
Thank
was a
you.
Really.
I think it came out well. I've proposed for next year that I wear something sort of like a Mrs. Roper style lounging jumpsuit.
That I
go for something more like that. So maybe the Deer and Doe Scirocco if the legs were three times as wide.
Oh, okay.
So I've proposed this certainly for the dates after Christmas. I'm like, surely she would be wearing something more comfortable.
Yeah, right.
So anyway.
Okay. Well, do you want to talk about some new patterns?
Absolutely. I noticed a company that I don't think I've made anything from yet called Porcelain has a brand new panty that is called the Brenda Brief, and it goes up to a 63-inch hip. What I thought was intriguing about it is it has four options. It's got a high waist and a mid-rise in a youth version and a not youth version. So they go down into sort of teen sizes, which I thought was really interesting. Plain fabric and view B throws some lace into the mix.
I see. Yeah, there's view C and D too.
Oh, thank you. C and D. You're absolutely right, but that's the high and the low rise version.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. And then
what's happening is I think in A and from A to C, it looks yeah. like the leg gets higher. Like there's a little mm-hmm. panel in A.
That's the rise. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those are interesting. Are you going to make some?
I'm not sure. I've been really unsuccessful at making underwear I like.
Me too. I have yet to be able to create a pair of underwear that's better than what I can buy.
Mm-hmm. That's it. But one of the stores I like in Georgia that you can only go to in person
mm-hmm.
has fabric that is similar to the fabric my ready-made underwear have.
Okay.
Because that's really what I think I'm missing is every fabric I find isn't equivalent
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to the ready to wear.
Yeah.
It's a little bit heavier. It's not stretchy enough or something else. And I've really struggled to find sort of commercial fabric. So,
yeah. Yeah.
That's so maybe there's a path if you can find the right fabric.
Okay. And the other one is this skirt from Love Notions called the Encore Skirt. It comes in four body styles, pencil, A-line, full, and pleated. There are two lengths, knee and midi, and it has very large pockets. There are videos to show you how to do the pocket construction, which looks like it'll be helpful because it looks like it's kind of those pockets like in the Pietra pants. Mm-hmm. You know, they're sort of folded over and made with the seams and stuff. And also for the zipper and waistband construction, and it's made for woven fabrics. And I really like, we have a picture in the show notes, and there's one where she's got a midi length one that's maybe A-line. And I don't know, it looks like it's faux suede or something, but I like that, that style.
Is it the green one?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking it might be corduroy, but I think you're right. Oh, suede maybe. Makes more sense, possibly.
Maybe.
Because I felt like I could see a little bit of nap difference between some of the pieces. But I agree with you. I like that one. That seems to be one of the ones with the hidden pleat.
Yes.
Which I really appreciate. I agree. I think that's a really, if I was going to make a version, that would be the one I'd be most interested in.
Okay.
Very cute.
All right. So Neat. What are we talking about today?
So I thought for our first mid-month episode in January that maybe we could talk about our year in review, what happened last year.
Yeah.
Because I think we both keep a little bit of track of that, and it might be kind of fun. I will say for me, it was eye-opening because my previous years, I've never made fewer than 250 garments in a year since returning to sewing. And this year I knew I was on track for a lot less, but having barely sewn at all in November and December, I actually ended with only 133 garments this year, which feels like I was standing still, even though I know that's actually a lot of garments.
2.5 per week. Yeah.
I mean, but it feels like I just sort of was standing still when I was doing it.
But how do you feel about it? Do you feel good?
I don't know. I think I'd feel better about it if it had been intentional instead of being because I'm feeling stuck right now. If it was, you know, because I had intended to make less. I was thinking I would end around 200 this year. And that's much lower than I've ever done. And I was okay with it. And if it had been, you know, 180 instead of 200, that'd be different. But 133 is like significantly less productive than I'd intended. And one of the things that I wrestle with it is, like I'm, as I mentioned earlier, I've been doing a lot of sort of video gaming, which is like the least productive possible use of time. I think I can only be slightly less productive by just watching TV, but I'm not used to that. I'm not used to not mm-hmm. always kind of doing something. And so maybe it's good for me to know that it's okay to not always produce,
That's
but
right.
I don't think I was ready to confront that right yet. So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Well, I stopped using the spreadsheet in June. I don't
Good
know
for
why.
You.
I think like I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore. And at that point, I had 27. So that would make it approximately one per week at that rate. So, but I think I slowed down a little bit the second half of the year because that's when I started taking the classes and stuff.
Right.
So, but I'm cool with that. I mean, I haven't, for me, it's just been, I think last year I did about the same, maybe a little bit more. I can't really remember, but I think that, I haven't felt any, I haven't slowed down in any of my, I'm not sewing less is what I'm trying to say. I'm not sewing less. I'm just, maybe spending more time per item.
Yeah. So you're putting the same amount of sewing time in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, it just takes a lot longer, you know, when you make a block for something and then draft a pattern and then make a muslin and, you know, all those things rather than, you know, using a ready-made pattern.
So do you, when you're prepping to sew, do you cut something out and sew it? Or do you have a stack of things you've already cut out that you haven't sewn yet?
No, I work one at a time in general. Yeah. Now if I have to make, if I was going to make I don't sew a bunch of the same pattern in general. And right now, anyways, the way that I'm working, it just, I'm doing one thing at a time for sure. I'm definitely doing one thing at a time.
So I've got, when I'm not feeling inspired to sew, I've been cutting things out. So I have like a stack of things that, where I may have bought a fabric and thought, oh, well, I bought it to do this. So I've got it cut out and it's just sitting there waiting for me. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm not sure if that's made it easier or harder for me. You know what I mean? Like whether or not I look at that stack and I'm like, well, I definitely don't want to make any of those things. So I'm not quite sure what's going to jumpstart me, but I'm hoping it's this class with Brooksanne that I'm taking, which starts as we're recording this coming week. And my hope is I know quite a few people in the class that there will be some feeling of camaraderie that makes it easier for me to hop in there and do things. So we'll see.
Cool. So how much do you have left in your closet?
As we started this show notes, I had 42 pieces sitting in my closet, and I don't think I've completed more than one item since then. So it'd be about the same, but I've also been brutal about winnowing my closet between selling items off and this last closet sale I had when I was done. I looked at every item and I'm like, if it's not something I want to keep, I'm not going to sell it again. I'm going to actually take and get rid of it at this time. And depending on what it was, either, take some of the fabric back or identify people who might find a use for that fabric or full on donate. So 42 pieces, which definitely sounds like more than enough clothing for any one human being, but is a really small amount for me. I have a pretty big closet and it's feeling roomy right now. So it's wild. How about you?
Well, almost all the things are still in my closet because nobody wants my clothes. I don't sell them.
And I'm sure that's not true. We'll start there, but
I do offer them to my mom if I make them and the shoulders are too tight. I'm really excited to take Brooksanne's tops class, so my mom will have no more gifts for me.
Because they'd have to be intentional in the future. You'd have to on purpose make something for her.
Yeah. I learned something recently because I was making some adjustments to a princess seam dress. And I was noticing that the neckline was a little loose in there. And so I didn't know why. This happens to me a lot, that the neckline will be loose in something. And so I was reading about it. And it's probably because I have broad shoulders and I have a full chest. But I'm kind of like, my shoulders and my chest are not indicative of the area in between. Like I'm smaller in that area. So that's why it's kind of buckling there. And it was so simple to fix that. You just like make, it's as if you're making a dart in the, in the neckline and it goes to zero at the arm side and you just fold it though. It's not a dart. And so it you can just cut it out of the pattern. You don't have to sew that dart in. And so it made like a little, and then I made the top again and it laid totally flat. It was great.
That's wonderful. That's the thing I'm afraid of. is that I'm going to take Brooke Sound's class because I'm going to take the top class as well. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I'm going to have to make all these changes to everything I make. I won't be able to just cut them out directly the way I do now. But I'll somehow feel compelled to improve the fit, which is good, but also to me feels daunting.
I see. Yeah, so that's a thing too. And I think after, you know, because I've over the years kind of figured out these adjustments that I have to make to every single pattern. And it really does make it much more appealing to just draw my own patterns. because
I think that's also
true. With the right fit, you know.
I think that's also true, but I'm looking forward to that part, wanting to make my own more. Well, that's really, really awesome. Do you have any designers where you made more than 10 of their patterns?
If you consider me a designer, then
well, you are obviously by definition a designer. You don't have to design for others.
That's the only person that I have more than 10 pieces from.
But that's really cool. Could you have said that last year?
No, definitely not.
So that's really awesome.
Yeah. What about you?
I mean, I of course have. I of course do. I made more than 10 pieces designed by Kara Miyamawi, by Jessalis, by True Bias, and by Helen's Closet, as well as more than 10 by myself. So, so I definitely did. Do you have any patterns you made? Sorry.
I was going to ask you, but what about, is there any patterns that you made 10 times?
Of course I did. But it's kind of weird to me because it was the Lodo dress, which I want to say is either Helen's Closet or True Bias, obviously.
True Bias.
Thank you. I couldn't quite remember. And DIY Daisy's sundress, who I didn't list and I should have, DIY Daisy. Mm-hmm. But there's an asterisk by that sundress because probably the first three or four were very specifically the sundress as written. Mm-hmm. Everything after that. It's the type of pattern where you're given sort of measure all these parts of your body and then cut the piece of fabric to this measurement plus these inches, like that kind of a pattern, right? But by the time I hit about the fourth or fifth one, I was no longer using the same proportions. I was no longer comparing it to this body part or whatever. It's arguably different. No one would be able to use that pattern and get to the look that I have in my sundress without talking to me about how I changed it. So it's one of those ones where it's very definitely the concept, the lines all came from there, but the actual final pattern isn't just different by my measurements. It's different in other ways.
It was inspired by that.
But it became a really big hit and I'm still wearing it. I'm sitting here in a hotel room where outside is in the 40s and I'm wearing one of those sundresses, which I will wear out and around all day today, with a jacket over it, but it's perfectly comfortable for that weather. So I like it very much. How about you? I assume, of course, you must have made many of one type of pattern.
I have zero that I've made more than 10 of.
What's the most?
The most would be probably variations of the obrigata pattern that I made. Like, because I made 1, 2, 3 dresses and 2 shirts from that are variations of that.
But so. That's your own pattern as well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love it.
So what type of fabric did you use the most?
I'm going to say woven.
No.
No, that doesn't, I can't use that. I think my most common was probably a cotton woven.
Okay.
Not specifically quilting cotton, although quilting cotton would fall in that space.
Okay.
But it would be a real close tie to linen. And the linens would come from a variety of sources, of course, because I got stuff at Grayline as well as at Mood when we were in New York, but most of it came from my one source. But it'd be between those two.
I looked at mine and I just had the stats from the first half of the year, but that was probably where I was using the most different fabrics anyway. And I looked and there were 19 unique values for fabric type. But out of all the things I had, 11 of them were 11 of my garments were linen. So there were 19 values for 27 things, and 11 of them came from linen. So definitely linen was my most popular thing I used.
Yeah, I think linen is, I know that it is generally thought not to be all season, but I find it to be an all season fabric where I live. Because we get cold weather, but not soupy doopy cold.
I think also, like, I work indoors. So, like,
true,
you know, like that helps. Also, there's one thing that I learned from Brooke Sands' class, which was doing underlining. And you could really sort of beef up linen with underlining.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I think it wears so nicely. It mm-hmm. just feels really good. So, mm-hmm. so yeah. How about fabric sources?
I probably had about 7 fabric sources that I used. What about you?
I had 34 different stores between online and in person. So one of the reasons I started tracking my source was a couple years ago, realizing that over half of my fabric came from Joanne and from fabric.com when it existed. So Amazon as the equivalent now. And I had 0 from Amazon and only of all the different things that I made of the 133, the fabric for only about a dozen of them came from Joanne. So everything else was different stores. Doesn't mean it isn't a big store, just that it wasn't those two specific big ones that I was concerned about, but 34 different ones. I'm still actively going out and trying to find small stores online or in person that I can patronize.
Well, what was your most made pattern this year?
I don't know.
Well, you wrote something down.
My apologies. You're absolutely right. But I wanted to start with talking a little bit more about my fabrics, because when I went through and looked at where I had bought most of my fabric from, if you sorted my list in order of number of shops, number of times I went to that store, they all started with an F.
Oh.
So it was Fine Fabrics in the USA, which is a Georgia-based store. It was fabricsstore.com for our linen. And it was Freeman's Creative, which is a store that I visit in Raleigh-Durham and also order from. But that's hilarious, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Why would they all be Fs? I was just impressed that those might, apparently I just go back to the Fs. But my most made pattern was definitely the Lodo by True Bias. I fell into a rut with that at the beginning of the year. And after I had started making them, I thought, I wonder what's the wildest thing I could make this dress out of. And so I started buying, you know, fun fur and sequins and silks and canvas and denim and all these things. And I ultimately ended up quilting several panels to make those dresses of. I tried everything I could imagine. And it's one of those where I will note that the max hip is 59.5 inches, which rounds up. So we allow it, but I found it round big. I actually had to size down in this garment, because by the time it got to even my massive hips, it was bigger than I had intended. It was looser than I had intended. So, and looser than it looked on the model's photos shown. So it was running a little bigger than I had expected, but yeah, I made a gazillion roughly. How about you?
My most made pattern was this shirt that I make for Jim. It doesn't meet our size requirements, but it comes very close at 56.5. And I think the finished is 72. So it's pretty a better size. But anyways, if you're interested in what pattern it is, you'll have to go to my Instagram, because we don't talk about but I made him several versions. And it's not that I made most of my patterns for Jim. It's just that happens to be one that I repeated. It looks very good on him. So, yep.
No, that's nice. That's really great. How about a favorite new technique?
I was really impressed by this lapped hand-picked zipper that I learned in Brooke Sands' class. Like, I could not believe how easy it was. And I love that technique. It makes me want to put zippers in, because it's so simple and it's so, It's just such a pretty finish. So I learned that. And I also learned underlining, which really can dramatically improve the quality and durability of a garment. And I was just so impressed with like what it can do to fabric. Like, for example, if you have a, you know, sometimes when you make like a rayon dress or something, it feels kind of flimsy, you know, as far as a dress goes. But if you had an underlining to it, which essentially makes it two layers thick, and you can change the properties of it using. So for, I was also taking this like online couture sewing class, and the woman was talking about she had a linen dress and she put this cotton underneath it, and the cotton underneath it made it get less wrinkles. Because the cotton was giving it the structure underneath, yeah. And it was also keeping it from, you know, like when you make linen pants, they tend to like balloon out by the end of the day, yeah. You know, they just kind of grow, but having the cotton underneath kept it from happening, which I thought, oh, that's a really interesting way of changing the way the fiber works, but still being able to keep the distinctive look of linen on the outside. I don't
right.
know. Really cool.
No, that is really neat. I look forward to learning more about that. For me, it was welt pockets and with a zip, if I'm feeling really wild, this is one where, because the look I wanted for the dress I designed for Taco was something that had a welt pocket in it. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to make one because yeah. You can't design one if you don't know how to do it. Or I think you could, but it's not going to be as effective. Like you can look at how others have designed welt pockets and I think create that without actually being able to do it. But that felt like cheating.
Yeah.
So I had to learn how to do it. And the first one I installed, I put in upside down. So if you wanted to get into the pocket, you would have to come up from underneath and go up. And so it was not a very effective pocket, but it taught me a couple of important things. One of which was what it looks like when you're installing it upside down.
I did use several welt pocket tutorials when I was like learning that. Like mm-hmm. the Brooksanne teaches you how to make a welt pocket in one of the classes, but I, you know, sometimes you need to see it a little different way. And so I can put in a couple of the helpful ones that I had. So
yeah, that's basically what I do is I have a set of bookmarks. I've got three or four of them and I look at least one every time I do it because I don't have it memorized. I don't do it often enough, but I've got mm-hmm. right now, one of the garments I have pre-cut just waiting for inspiration to hit is a version of my jet dress from the Taco magazine made out of a Merchant and Mills large check print.
Okay.
And so I'll have to look it up again when I put the pocket in because I have to look every time.
One thing I love about welt pockets is you can put them absolutely anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the most amazing thing. Like you could just put them in the middle
right
of
in
anything.
The center of your chest, yep. Anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. And they can be added as an afterthought. So if you,
yes.
if you manage to find something thrifting and you're like, damn, I wish I had a pocket. It can, you can just put in a welt pocket. It'll be fine. So yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. Who is your favorite new designer this year?
So mine's a little bit weird because first off, I will note, I am not my favorite designer, new designer this year, because I've been designing for me for decades, but Jessilis of the Tate romper. So there's something weird and I don't quite understand it, but basically Jessilis is helping other people birth patterns. And so the Tate romper, I think, is a small museum product that Jessilis also participated in the launch of, in testing, drafting, all those things. So Jessilis is working with a bunch of other small designers to put stuff out. And I have only purchased a couple of the patterns that have come out that way, Tate being the one I've made a ton of, but I've loved watching what's coming out of Jessilis's coordination with these other designers. So yeah. I'm not even sure that I'm properly ascribing the designing to Jessilis. It may be that they aren't as involved in the designing. They're more the somebody comes forward with an idea and an amount of talent around it. And then Jessilis is filling in the blanks. I'm not sure, but okay. I've enjoyed if you were going to follow on Instagram, I'd follow Jessilis to see what they're connected with. How about you?
Well, my favorite new designer is me.
I think it's fabulous. I'm loving watching it happen.
Yeah. It's been an interesting thing because I think like we did like the PF self-drafted maybe the first year and I hated drafting stuff for myself, but I come to find out a lot of it is because I didn't know enough about how to do that. And so like funny thing is when you learn how to do something, it becomes easier.
I don't understand. That's so odd. I would have thought just plowing ahead without knowledge would be the fastest path and the funnest. No, that's amazing. I really love watching that start to happen.
Well, since this is a sewing community podcast, what do you consider the best thing about 2023 for the sewing community?
I think the best thing is, I think they're related to each other. I think there are two really great things. One has been the growth of really small designers, like micro designers, where they may only ever make two patterns, but they were in their brains and they had to get them out into the world. So they did. And I think that's been helped by the proliferation of classes to teach pattern design / drafting to lots and lots of people affordably. You don't have to go to a fashion school to learn how to do these things. And there are many, many different companies offering this, including Brooks Anne, obviously, which is really primarily doing it for your own body. But that's step one, right? Mm-hmm. And there are other support systems out there. And I think it's really interesting that we're at a point where it's just anybody with an idea could actually design, draft, grade, and produce a sewing pattern. So I think that's cool. How about you?
Yeah. So a couple of things have been good for me this year. Number one is there's been some local events that I've enjoyed being part of. Like I was a part of a couple of classes, a couple of them because of buy my sewing machine, like came with classes. And then also, like our local fabric swap has kind of introduced me to local people. I got to see Jasmine Howard there. And then there's several people that I don't think listen to our podcast, but are that are local, part of the local sewing community here. And that's been really nice. There is this, so DC Frock Tales is coming up. And last year I bought tickets and didn't end up going to it. And this year I did the same thing, only I didn't buy the ticket. So I'm also not going, I think.
That's a lot more affordable to not go. If you're not going to go, this is a better way to do it.
It is. But I have this feeling in my mind like, oh, you'll wish you had gone. But the night of, I'll just be so happy that I'm not going, I think. I don't know. It's like it's one thing to go to a swap where you can just leave from work, go there, hang out for a little bit and go home whenever you want. It feels like if you go to this Frocktails, I mean, like I don't mind making a dress. I could also wear any of the other things in my closet. That's no problem. But I would feel like I need to stay there. Like I wouldn't go for just like if I felt uncomfortable, I wouldn't leave 20 minutes later. First of all, it's all the way in DC. So I don't know.
It's also one of those where I think for me, at least, there feels like there's a lot of pressure around the garment. Like if I showed up in just something I'd made 6 months ago, I think I'd feel weird and uncomfortable, even though I don't think anyone else would know.
Yeah, I think probably it would be different too for you because you're more of a sewing celebrity than I am. Like people would recognize you at that event, you know, like
I think people would recognize you too. Well, you have thousands Jasmine of followers.
Was. Well, but I mean, at the DC event, I just don't think.
Yeah, I know it is big. Yeah. But I think, I think there's a lot of pressure potentially associated with that. So I can understand. I didn't buy tickets to the Atlanta Frocktails, which probably means I'm not going. And I bought tickets and didn't go last year.
Yeah. So you did the same as me. The other thing that I've really liked about 2023 is online learning and being able to take classes online. I recently resubscribed to Craftsy for $1.49 for a year. I just had to put something in my calendar to make sure I unsubscribe before they charge me $200 for the next year.
Yeah.
For some specific kind of niche classes that I wanted to take, I've kind of gone down a rabbit hole with this couture sewing. I think we'll talk a little bit more about that on the next episode. But online learning has really been cool for me this year.
That's really awesome. I think there are some things that I've not loved again this year that have really stood out for me. So I'm just going to kind of briefly call out that it is stunning to me the number of size limited patterns that are still being released by all these brand new small designers that I'm so excited exist in the world. Mm-hmm. But it is still frustrating to see something new come out, start to see all of my friends making it, and then suddenly go, that ends at a 50-inch hip. I don't have reasonable access to it, and I'm not going to put the effort in.
Yeah.
I could, but I'm not gonna. And it's disappointing. And it's the same thing where when you come back and you say why, the answer is always I'm just one person, or I'm gonna do the larger sizes later. I'm gonna come back to it, or something like that, which are the same answers we had years ago when the resource is already there. There are lots of people who are out there willing to help you. Jessalis is a great example of that. Folks who are out there who are willing to help you get to a place where you can do it. So it's still exhausting when you come out and you look and you realize that maybe a third of patterns come out sized for my body. And again, not the biggest body out there. So, So very disappointing. Do better, sewing community. What advice
would you give to your 2024 self?
It is okay to slow down. That I am not worse at what I do or not as valued, won't be less valued in the community because I sew less, because I take more time to do what I'm doing. Because I think there's a part of me that definitely thinks, well, if I'm not, because the thing I do is I overproduce tons and tons of stuff and I do it really quickly and I have fun doing it and I just show up with all these garments. And if I make half of that, nobody will be interested in seeing what I'm doing because I'm no longer the one thing I provide, which is sort of abundance, won't be what I'm providing. So no one will be interested. And I do want to be a part of the community. I do want people to be interested in what I'm doing. That matters to me. And so I'm nervous about it, but I think it's okay.
I think it's okay. And you know that that's not true, right? I mean, like, you know, at least intellectually, you know, that's not true.
Intellectually, sure. But I don't think social stuff lives exclusively in the mind, right? There's a lot of heart. Mm-hmm. So I'm nervous about it, but I think I'm going to have to do it anyway because it's time. It's just time for me to acknowledge that it's okay to slow down and to start taking more time about the things I make. I may not have closet sales this year. If I do, I won't have as many because I'm not going to be producing as many garments. Like intentionally, I don't plan to produce as many garments. So,
well, I think it'll be really cool to see too. Like you did for a while, some process videos, and
I did.
I think that would be. People will enjoy that as your kind of journey goes along with. You know, do some of the things you learn and the classes you plan to take this year. And I think people would like to see videos on that.
I do miss doing the videos. What I found is when we moved 6 months ago, I didn't feel like I have the right space set up to do it. So I haven't figured out how to go back to them. And I was actually at home over the last week of December, looking at my space and thinking, is there a way I could rearrange this so that I get back what I had, which was basically sitting at my sewing machine and being able to just turn around and be sitting at my serger?
Yeah.
Is there a way for me to build that space back out again? And I think I figured out a way to do it. I just have to get it past my husband's A-OK, since it's in a public area that we both share, to make sure it makes sense for him as well. Because I think I found my answer. And if I did, I think videos would be able to come back because I'd now have what I wanted in a sewing space. So how about for you? What would you tell yourself?
So my favorite part of sewing, which it took me a while to kind of figure this out, is actually the sewing.
Yeah.
And so, so that's what I should enjoy. Sometimes I've found that, I guess it's sort of a similar message to you, which is slowing down. Although I didn't have like a emotional connection with slowing down, but I think that I focus a lot of times on getting the product. And that's actually not my favorite part of sewing. As soon as I have the product, I'm looking for the next thing because I want to be sewing, you know, right. Like, since my favorite part is the sewing part, I should be enjoying the sewing part and, taking my time with it. And I have started really taking a lot more time with things and enjoying that. So
when you say the sewing part, do you mean the sitting in front of the machine, pushing the pedal with your foot and pushing it through the machine sewing? Or do you mean all the like pinning together to get the right collar or like all of it?
Yeah, I mean all of that except for the cutting out, because that's not part of my favorite, but I kind of mean, yeah. And also the hand sewing now that I've been putting mm-hmm. into things and the details of, folding over something for a flat felled seam or something, you know, all these small details I've been really getting much more involved in.
Okay. I think that makes sense. I was a little nervous for you if it was just the part where you push it through your machine, because I don't think you can go overly, like there's a speed past which you're just, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's all the other stuff too. Yeah. That sounds really good. I think I'm going to be a year or two behind you. Like, you'll continue to develop more thoughtful sewing practices and I'll be like, oh shoot, that thing Beverly's been talking about how great it is. Maybe I'm going to do that next year. So I think I'm going to be a little behind you, but trying to find some of those really neat parts of the intentional practice.
Okay. So where were your favorite sources of fabric this year?
I mean, Mood is right up at the top of the list. And it's weird for me because like when we were at Mood, I didn't find all that much I was super interested in, which I think is because it's too much.
It's overwhelming.
It very much reminds me of my place in Atlanta, except Mood is cooler, but it's mm-hmm. the same overwhelming amount of stuff where you could spend 2 days doing a quarter of the space and not even doing that really well, like doing mm-hmm. it okay, but not great. And so I think in person, it's too much. Somehow online, it's more chunkable because you can be more intentional to say, oh, what I'm looking for is a rayon linen blend that has blues and greens in it. Go find that and mm-hmm. and get served up 150 possibilities still, but only 150, and you're not having to sort through all these other things. So I think I found that to be really nice. And I like a lot of their Mood exclusive fabrics that they've done. I enjoy those. So I'm a little disappointed because they still have the same ones from 3 years ago, still mm-hmm. there, kind of holding on as they try and get rid of the last 10 yards or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy flipping through those. I really, really like it. So Mood is definitely really high on my list. Fabricstore.com, where we get the linen, where you introduced me to the linen. And I started off just buying 15 yards at a time of the undyed linen, mm-hmm. the natural linen for dyeing. I have started exploring some of their other fabrics. And the sundress I'm wearing right now is made out of one of their cotton prints. And I love it. It's texturally, it's nice to feel. I like the quality of it. I think the colors are bright and brilliant. The print is really good. So I love those cottons now that I'm getting from there. Mm-hmm. And more recently, I made a donation to a cause and got a shirt made out of tea towels from Frocks and Frou-Frou. I can't remember now. Oh, damn it. I'll cut that out and get the name right next. I won something from a sewist named Lily in the Southern Hemisphere, whom I adore. And it was a shirt made out of tea towels. Oh, and nice. Fabricsstore.com is now selling tea towels in like cottons in really beautiful shapes and patterns rather. And I want to buy some and try and make that same shirt for myself out of these tea towels, because it feels like a neat thing to do. So I'm finding non-linen things and non-aisle 19 linen things to do at fabricstore.com, which I'm enjoying. And then finally, there's a store that I don't even know where it is, but it's called Fancy Tiger Craft. And I like their Instagram.
In Colorado.
It may be. I like their Instagram and I like the fabrics they curate. So I'm having a good time hitting up the things that they have. I haven't bought as much from them as I have from some other sources, but they are, as I winnow down my sources, because I think I am going into a year where I'll buy from fewer companies, they're likely to stay on the list because I think what they do is neat. So yeah. How about you?
Well, I'm going to first talk about my local family, my local fabric store, Domesticity. Everyone knows that who's been listening to our podcast. I don't buy a lot of fabric there. They do have an abundance. They do have a lot more quilting cottons than they have garment, but they do have garment fabrics there, a decent section, selection of them. And I think they're planning on expanding the amount of garment fabrics they have. And so it's my go-to place. I think, you know, I want to go there first before I go elsewhere, just so I can support my local fabric store. I want them to do business. And, but outside of the local, there's three main shops that I shop from. I buy fabric from Merchant and Mills. If you're in the U.S., if you buy $150 from them, it's free shipping from England. Yes.
Oh, my God. How come no one has ever told me this? I'm sure you have several times, but.
Yeah. It's,
oh, my gosh.
And like buying from Merchant and Mills fabric is not hard to get to $150.
Yeah.
And
it's very simple.
Yeah. And I have really been enjoying, also they have a lighter weight linen that I've really enjoyed, and it comes in many solid colors. So I've really enjoyed that. And they also have a really luxurious tencel linen that
Wow.
And you can make dresses, and it's also good for like a bottom weight kind of thing. So anyways, I don't need to sell you on Merchant and Mills fabric. It's fantastic. The other one, of course, is Stylemaker Fabrics. I talk about it a lot on here. They have a lot of, they have really nice fabrics and they have beautiful colors, and I'm just really drawn to them. They have the best fabric for t-shirts. It's a modal cotton blend. It's not cheap. It's kind of expensive, but I have a t-shirt that I wear at least once a week, and I've worn it for 2 years now. So it's really nice quality fabric for the cotton lycra modal blend. Really like that. And then also I just talked about their Oxford and twill fabric. They have really nice rayons. They have all sorts of stuff. They also have like branded fabrics like Atelier Brunette and stuff like that there that I think are really nice. And finally, I have Mood on my list too. And Mood is a great place to, if I need, let's see, I might need some pink silk organza. I'm going to get that Mood. It's a large store that has nicer quality stuff than like, say, Joann's. I actually went into Joann's recently. So here's a little bit. I went into Joann's recently to get they had one of their 99 cent pattern things, right? Or $1.99.
Yeah.
So I went in and I got a few of those, which, by the way, I just gave away all my big four patterns to my mom because I was so disgusted with the fact that I made this dress, the Vogue pattern, which I think would be the highest quality of big four patterns. And it was technically supposed to be too small for me, and it was just perfect size for you. So, I was just like, you know what? I don't need this. If I'm going to buy a pattern, it's going to be from a indie pattern company. I'm not wasting fabric on them anymore. Anyways, so I was in Joann that day, and the only fabric that I was interested in at all was the fabric I sent to you, because you had mentioned that you had liked their I think it's in their upholstery section.
Yeah, it
the
is.
Canvas, but it was lighter weight canvas. So I found this Galaxy and sent it to Jenny, but I didn't find any fabric that I really wanted there. So I don't shop with Joanne anymore, pretty much. And it's probably just my local stores, maybe not so good.
Well, they're all very different. So when we lived in Hendersonville, the one we had in Hendersonville didn't have a great variety. Their sale table was really terrible. It wasn't my favorite. Mm-hmm. Moving to Asheville, the one in Asheville is a little bit better. And so I don't mind going there, but I don't go very often. But when we travel, I often hit a Joann's because I'm just curious as to what they're like. And I went yesterday. And I got some big four patterns because it's funny. The same exact experience with that Vogue pattern has me looking at big four patterns because it has the opposite effect for me, right? If there's something where it comes out incredibly much too big, but proportionately, it's not like the neck was giant or anything like that. It was just the other parts of it. So I went out and I flipped through. Simplicity was this week's sale item. I flipped through the Simplicity patterns and I found some. And then I went and looked at the envelopes because these days, the ones that have been printed in the last year, the outer envelope tells you the finished measurements. And if it doesn't, you can just pull out the instruction sheet and it has finished measurements on it. Where before you had to unfold all of the paper in order to get on a pattern piece to find the one that had the measurements on it. So they've made that easier. And I was able to target, there's a couple of things I need. I need a pattern for sort of an Edwardian garment for a volunteer acting gig I've got later this year. And I needed to find something that would fit my chest and waist and I can make my own walking skirt. It'll be fine. Right. So I went and I looked for that. And then I found, while I was flipping through, I found a couple of other things where I'm like, I wonder if that would work. And I looked at the finished measurements and looked at the amount of ease it looked like they intended. And I'm like, yeah, I think I could actually make that work. Mm-hmm. And so it was a reminder to me that even though for most of it, it doesn't, but because they're so bad at determining the size with ease across the garments, there are some things that work there for me. So that was, I had the opposite experience. That's funny. And I bought four different fabrics while I was there, including their muslins were 30% off. So I bought some muslin for the purpose of being muslin, like muslin.
for our European friends, calico.
Yes. And I bought it for the Brooks Anne camper class to be able to do my thing. So I'm really quite excited by that. But yeah, Joann doesn't tend to be a source for me. And if they are, it's because I'm specifically looking for something sort of schlubby.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Okay. Well, that I think is a pretty good wrap up of 2020 for us. I can't believe we're in 2024 already.
It is very wild. I have spent this past week writing 2023 on all of my documents at work. So yeah. So that's quite exciting. But yeah, if folks would like to support us, please check out our Patreon and rate and review us on your favorite podcatcher.
All right. With that, we will
see you next Tuesday. The Punk Frockers is created, produced, and edited by Beverly Baptiste and Jenny Hassler. On Instagram, you can find the podcast at Punk Frockers. You can find Jenny at J.O. Hassler and Beverly at Weeds to Wildflowers. Our artwork and music is created and performed by Jim Duran. You can find him on Instagram and his website at jimduran.art.